Hi FM, 101.9 megahertz of life.
We were talking a little bit earlier about the water and the situation in terms of the quality of South African water. There's been a lot of rumor around this typhoid or thyroid. I can't quite get it exactly right, although we did speak to Professor Adrian Puren last week on it, and they are urging doctors just to keep an eye out for it. I've heard rumors that it comes through the water, that then other people have said that's absolutely untrue. Either way, what we wanted to try and understand is how good is the quality of our water. Professor Anthony Turton, professor at the Center for Environmental Management at the University of the Free State, seems to have just disappeared. So we are going to be talking to him in just one moment. So we want to understand, is there evidence that recent cases of typhoid fever are linked to contaminated municipal water or not? Professor Anthony Turton, good morning. I hope that's better. We lost you there for a second. Are you with us?
Yes, good morning to you and the listeners.
Good morning. So there's lots of concern around this typhoid fever. Is it linked to our water?
Yes, so I'm going to be very careful when I talk about the subject because I don't want to drive any hysteria or any undue concern.
Right.
But you know, with that caveat, we must appreciate that what has been happening in the country over the last decade, of maybe two decades, has been an accelerated breakdown of our wastewater infrastructure in particular. So we've been discharging over 5 billion litres of sewage every single day into our rivers. And of that 5 billion, about 4.1, 4.2 billion litres is discharged untreated back into the rivers and dams. And over that period of time, we've now got an accumulation in our rivers and dams of a whole lot of things. So let's just unpack that a little bit. We've got a great number of pathogens, a whole range of pathogens, some of which are starting to become visible, but others that are still invisible, but are out there. But sadly, within that whole milieu, we are also providing nutrients and ideal breeding ground for all sorts of mutations, because in the wastewater return flows, we get partly metabolized medication. And so this partly metabolized medication, if you really drill down into it, you start seeing what it is. There's sort of broad clusters of chemicals in there, and some of them are antibiotics, a very, very, very dilute form of metabolized antibiotic. But some of them are antiretrovirals, because we've got a very high number of HIV patients in the country, and they're all on antiretrovirals. But then we also get antidepressants and all kinds of recreational narcotics. And, of course, the big one is estrogen, you know, from birth control prophylaxis. So our return flows into our rivers has really got a cocktail of all sorts of dilute forms of medication. And no one's ever really done a credible study, to show what happens when you get pathogens proliferating or mutating under conditions where they're exposed to low doses, but over a long time scale of the very, very medications that we use to treat the diseases arising from the pathogens. So in all probability, we are likely to see this kind of thing happening increasingly in the future, but I don't think we can link it at this point in time to the typhoid outbreak. And my understanding of the typhoid issue is, in fact, a fairly isolated issue. So I don't think it's cause for major concern at this point in time, but it is something that has been identified by the NICD.
Would you, I take your point as very, very well, that we can't know anything unequivocally unless you test everybody's taps and understand what's really going on there. Would you recommend that we start to consider filtration systems in our houses or boiling our water before we drink it?
See, we have to get back to basics. You know, we mustn't complicate our lives unnecessarily. Mm. And getting back to basics is, we must simply expect the government of the day that's responsible for delivering services, they must simply deliver those services. And,
We don't want to die while we wait for that, right?
No, but I think that's the important first step, you know. And we've got to, we've got to, uh, we've got to mobilize the public concern, and we've got to convert that into the rocket fuel of change. You know, we need to have change. And,
yes.
And I'll just give one example. The government is legally obliged to set standards, and the standards for drinking water quality is SANS 241. That is the national standard for drinking water quality. Now, the individual can't go and test that all the time to see if they're getting SANS 241 water. But the SANS 241 reporting standard is captured in two reporting structures, that is the blue drop and green drop reporting system. And our government has waived that for some reason. They decided at some point in time they're no longer going to get blue and green drop reports. So that's where it starts, you see, because if you don't have your, in this case, a blue drop, that's the water quality in your taps. If you don't have that blue drop report, then you do not have the assurance that the local bulk water provider is in compliance, and therefore you get a slow erosion of trust and confidence. And this is what is happening now. You know, people generally distrust government. They generally distrust each other. And now they're starting to look at expensive filtration systems and expensive other remedies. But it all gets down to the basics. Now, let's just get back to the SANS 241 reporting system. Let's just hold government accountable. And government must deploy officials that are accountable. It's as simple as that. If we get that right, then all of these other things start falling by the wayside.
Where does the buck stop with our quality of water?
Well, water quality standards are determined by law within the Department of Water and Sanitation. So DWS is responsible for setting standards. And therein lies a conundrum, because the department, while they're responsible for setting the standards, doesn't really have the capacity to enforce it other than through regulatory oversight. But then in the Constitution, we've got a thing called the Cooperative Governance Clause. And that Cooperative Governance Clause says that no single government department can interfere with the activities of other tiers and spheres of government. So up until now, the Department of Water and Sanitation has used that clause to justify why it is unable to regulate or intervene in municipal affairs. Now, this clearly is not in the public's best interest, because we have to clarify that matter. And I approached the Helen Suman Foundation some time ago to try and get them to take this matter to the Constitutional Court to see if they would actually get a Constitutional Court ruling on the validity of this. And for whatever reason, they declined to take it further. But nonetheless, this is one of the central issues. So OUTA and Water Shortage South Africa and subsequently the SA Business Water Chamber has been working very, very tirelessly behind the scenes to try and establish an independent water regulator that's credible and that's capable of enforcing, amongst other things, the blue and green drop reporting system. Because once we have that, you see, if someone reports that, for example, Johannesburg Water is compliant to SANS 241, then everyone has the assurance that this is okay. Then you don't have to go and spend all this money and have an additional worry on your plate, because people have got many other concerns that they've got to deal with on a day-to-day basis, and water quality should not be one of those things. So we've got to get back to basics, restore confidence and trust. But the problem is that our current water reticulation systems were never ever designed anywhere in the country. They were never, ever designed to treat sewage-contaminated feedstock. That's the problem. Mm. So we have to get back to the absolute basics. We cannot allow raw sewage to be discharged into our drinking water systems and not expect to have some or other outbreak of some or other undesirable pathogen in the future. Now, this is just pure basic common sense.
Yeah, it really is. But either way, you know, whilst we put pressure on government to do this, while we try and hold them to a greater standard, what is your feeling about the how people should treat water coming out of their taps? Would you be comfortable to drink tap water right now, or would you filter it or treat it?
Well, I'll answer that in two ways. So the first way, my standard answer would be that I would respect the official position on this matter, and that comes out of the National Institute of Communicable Diseases. So what they say goes. So their pronouncement, I think, is the correct pronouncement, and I would support that. But now you ask about my own personal circumstances. I happen to live in the Port Shepstone area where we supplied with water from the Mzumkulu River through the district municipality of Ugu, which is a broken, failed structure.
So you have no choice out there, really. We drink foul water
all the time, absolutely foul water. And our water is contaminated. In fact, we either don't have water or when we do get it, it's contaminated. So I have a fairly sophisticated filtration system on my home, but I happen to be privileged in the sense that I've been part of the design of the system, and I got the system at a reasonable price because I was part of the prototyping of the system. Nonetheless, I personally live drinking that water. And I have confidence simply because the filtration system is so good. But I have a lot of empathy for people that either can't afford such systems or are forced to live other circumstances. If that's the case, then the second best option would be to boil it. But of course, now you've got other issues because you've now got increased energy costs. It's a cost and nuisance factor. And there's a risk, there's a hazard because I have got boiling water in containers and someone's going to get burnt with it, etc. So it opens up a whole different can.
Yeah, the unintended consequences are not simple either. It is 8:32, Professor Anthony Turton, professor at the Center for Environmental Management at the University of the Free State. Thank you.